Oh, wait, wait. Just a minute, Jason. Joy, do you want me to run the meeting?
Yes, please. Okay. That would be great.
We will begin this informal hearing process on Northern States Power Company, the Border Winds Energy Project. This is case number. Is the echo problem fixed, Jason? Seems to be. Okay. This is case number PU-22-173. It is 133 June 29th, 2022. I'm Randy Christman, one of the Public Service Commissioners. With me here in the room is Commissioner Sherry Haugen-Hoffert. Our chair, Julie Fedorchak, is on the road, but attending us, with us virtually. And Commissioner Fedorchak, is it all right? Did you, I just want to confirm on the record, did you want me to chair the hearing this afternoon?
I would very much appreciate that. Thank you, Randy.
Okay. Also at the table in attendance is Molly Smith, representing the applicant. Victor Shook, our Director of Public Utilities, Brian Johnson, a legal counsel, Rob Frank, a utility analyst, Steve Cortana with Leona here as a public member, and our IT expert Jason running the show. So with that, I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Haugen-Hoffert, do you?
No, just for clarification with people online, do they introduce themselves or?
So Commissioner, we will definitely have the team introduced. I'll probably go through one slide and then hand it over to Ellen with Excel, who will introduce everyone that's online.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Thanks.
Other than that, no opening comments.
And Commissioner Fedorchak, did you have any opening comments? Yes. Not anymore. We're not hearing anything after. Can you hear me?
Can you unmute her, Jason? Okay.
I think we need to move forward. There are other things this afternoon, too. Molly, from applicant's perspective, are you okay with that till she tunes in? And there'll be a recording of it. She can review it.
Yes, I think that's just fine.
Okay. We'll continue on. Jason, see what you can do to help get her hooked up. I want to emphasize an informal hearing involves only undisputed facts. If disputed information comes before us, we'll have to wrap up and issue a new notice of hearing in an informal hearing.
Randy?
The applicant goes first. So in just a moment, I'll turn it over to Molly. But yes, Commissioner, can you hear me now?
Okay, I can. I'm sorry. I didn't have any opening comments, and I am going to switch my views so I can have a better way to facilitate this. So anyway, my apologies.
No problem at all. We just covered the part about that an informal hearing is for undisputed facts only, and we're just ready to turn it over to Ms. Smith to begin the case.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. I have handed out in advance a PowerPoint presentation, just a printout. Ellen, I think if you wanted to be able to share the PowerPoint presentation on the screen, I'm going to guess that you can do that. So you have to. Okay. I guess we can't share it. So I have printouts, though, so everybody has a copy of what you have. And so if you just let us know what page you're on as you're going through the presentation, then we will follow along with you. I will take the first, it looks like we do have it up for those online. So the first page that we have is just the overview of what we have filed. We have a repower certification filing, and that was a certification of Christopher Clark on behalf of Xcel Energy. It has an environmental and regulatory compliance memo, which is basically a summary of how the repower complies with the applicable commission requirements, including the exclusionary and avoidance area requirements and the order requirements.
Excuse me, Molly?
Yes.
I just want to interrupt for 1 second. Jason, could you change whatever screen, like the one that's just the picture of us? That's all I'm seeing. Could you move that to what the presenter is showing?
I don't have a PowerPoint to share on screen.
Oh, I thought they were sharing.
So.
Anyway, it's okay.
Send it to my email.
I've got all my materials with me, but I don't have the PowerPoint stuff that they're showing on the screen. I might not need it. That's fine.
And I think Victor's able to send it. He's going to send it right now. We filed a copy this morning, so we should be able to share it.
Okay, very good. If that works, great. But proceed anyway.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go through my slide, and then we'll get to the more substantive part. This will be more familiar to you anyway. So the attachments to the environmental report, there was a noise and shadow flicker. There are noise and shadow flicker modeling reports that are for the current turbine model that's being proposed and demonstrate compliance. There is an obstruction evaluation microwave beam path analysis in Appendix B. There's also a letter at the end of that appendix that addresses some information that was provided in that report. Appendix C is cultural resource reports and correspondence with the State Historical Society of North Dakota. Appendix D is our delineated wetland review, and Appendix E is a natural resource assessment that was conducted. There was also some correspondence provided by the State Historical Society of North Dakota, and we filed a supplement indicating that their concerns had been addressed and that we could move forward with this proceeding. And the second part of our request is an amendment request. So having looked at at least two prior repower dockets where there were limitations on the megawatts that could be the nameplate capacity that could be produced by a project, where those were specified specifically in the order and in the certificate of site compatibility, our understanding is that the commission has needed to amend those orders and certificates to remove that limitation, and that's what we're asking for here, because the new nameplate capacity, instead of 2.0 turbines, they will be 2.2, so it will increase the nameplate capacity. It will not change the megawatts that are delivered to the grid per the generator interconnection agreement. So with that, the next part of the presentation, Ellen, I'll let you introduce yourself and who is on the line with us as well. And then we're about to have the PowerPoint presentation up, so you will be able to know that everybody can see it online as well as have it in front of them. So Ellen, I'll turn it to you. Ellen, can you hear us? So, Ellen, do you want to go ahead with the presentation? I have it up in front of me. Are we able to take it off for a second?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take it off for a second while you introduce everyone that's on with you, and then we'll go back to the PowerPoint presentation, and you can let me know when you need to move forward. I have been given the remote, so.
Okay. Can you guys hear me?
We can.
Okay. I don't know what was going on there. Okay. So my name is Ellen Heine. I'm in the siting and land rights group here at XL Energy. So we do the most of the state and federal site and route permitting and stuff like that. So I actually wrote them down. We've got a number of people on the project team that are on the call here. So I'm going to go through the list so I don't miss somebody, because some people just say anonymous names. Dave Cedarquist is on. I think you guys, probably some of you have met him before. He's our regulatory lead on this. And then Tom Zellmer is the senior project manager for this repower project. Srinivasan Sundaresan is the engineering manager. He's assisting Tom, and you can call him Sun. That's what we all are calling him now. Jamie Orok is the operations manager at the Border Winds Wind Farm. And then we have Pete Gitson and Chad Peterson, who are also in the siting and land rights group with me. They've been the leads on the landowner outreach and communications part of this. And then Kate Schindler and Shannon Whiten are in our environmental services group. So they are the lead reviewers of the specifically the environmental reviews and that kind of stuff that goes with this, for especially for site permits. And then also, as you met, Molly Smith is our attorney on this project. And then we also have Dean Sather from Westwood, who's been our consultant on this. And Westwood actually did the initial permitting for Border Winds when it was constructed with Sequoia, and then Res as this project got built. So they came in with some history of the project, which they were able to use going forward here. So do you want – I can't tell if you have the slide up. Should I wait a second for you to –
We'll switch it over right now. So now we have it up, and I'll move it forward past.
Okay, and yep, we're just going to go through. This is a pretty general high-level overview of the project, and then obviously open it up for discussion and questions. So just noting, first of all, that we have we started reviewing possibility for repowering a number of different wind farms that we have in our NSP region. Because that increases the energy produced by those projects, and it also basically it reduces costs over the long term of operating those projects. So one of the advantages is that there is additional landowner and government tax payments that come from that increased power generation. And just wanted to note, there was an advanced determination of prudence that was approved just this February of 2022 that included the Border Winds project as one of those repowers. And then that next slide is just, that's to show you an overview of the wind farm and where that is in the state. It's right up in Rolette County there, right on the border with Canada. There's 75 turbines located within the wind farm, and there's no change to the site layout, obviously, because this is a repower. So all of the bases, the turbine foundations, those are all staying, and the repower, which I'll hit on the next slide here, that just involves some of the stuff up tower on there. So the site layout remains the same throughout the project. I think that's all I really need to say about that. So,
excuse me, I have to interject again. Jason, I'm still just seeing the white picture of all of us, the white frame with the picture of all of us. Can that be taken and exchanged for the slides?
You want the slide on the full screen?
I just can't.
You'll have to go to the PSC website to view the slideshow. It's because it doesn't broadcast that to the GoToMeeting.
I see. I don't think I can communicate from the PSC website though, can I? Probably not. All right, I'll just go without it. That's fine.
I will try to just be really clear in going through all of the stuff on the slides then. The map picture's worth 1,000 words. So just, yeah, the key is that it's staying the same. I will. Okay. So then just wanted a quick, I know that you guys have approved at least two previous wind repowers in the state. I'm not sure if there are additional ones in the queue right now, but just wanted to quick highlight what that is. So the repowering is, as it says, they're retrofitting existing wind facilities with new and or refurbished technology or components, and that's to maximize the generation and improve efficiency with, you know, particularly keeping in mind costs and being as cost effective as possible as we do that. So this particular project, what we have there now are they're V100 Vestas turbines, 100-meter blades on those existing turbines. And so our proposal is to replace those with 110-meter blades. So a new hub and rotors that will be installed to support those larger blades. And then there's some electrical upgrades and components that happen inside the nacelle, which I'll show in the next slide here. The existing towers and foundations, as I mentioned, those stay in place and are reused on the repower. The construction process we're estimating is about 6 to 8 months worth of construction activity. And currently we're estimating that we will start probably with some civil preparation, lay down area or some basic things like that. But the majority of the turbine work we expect to be in. So that would start in 2024 within the majority of the turbine activities in 2025 at this time. And then that next slide. We got it. This is just a component drawing showing the Vestas turbines and what we're planning to do. The replacements are they're new, as I mentioned, the new 110-meter blades, which are longer than 10% longer than the existing, and then some of the bearings and cylinders that accommodate those blades. And then there's some replacement of gearbox and a generator and transformer inside the nacelle. And an overhaul of the electrical system within that. So just that all that work is up tower as far as the components of that. And then, yep, next slide. So just wanted to note the compliance with the commission requirements. We did review all of the certification compliance requirements. It's located within the designated project site that was permitted in the initial project. The goal of this project is to improve the existing wind energy technology available to improve the output. And it does comply with the commission's current exclusion area and avoidance area requirements. The setback requirements, there is one note on that. We have, based on the additional setback needed with that 110-meter blade, one property was found to be just inside of that increased radius that is a non-participating landowner, and we've been attempting to make contact with that landowner, but we hadn't heard back at first, and we discovered that landowner, and this is noted in the application as well, that landowner passed away fairly recently, and so our land agent has been working with the current the person leasing that land to see if we can figure out who the heirs are who are taking over on that, and the leasee was also trying to figure out who to be in contact with. So we're in process of determining who to reach out to on that and getting that figured out. As we noted, we will be requesting a variance for that setback once we find out who the new owner or owners are. If we aren't able to get that, then we will just be planning to not repower that particular turbine so that it stays within the current required setback distance. Was there a question in there?
Ellen, I do have a question. This is Julie Fedorchak. So in the materials, I saw two turbines that I thought reached into non-participating land or landowners once you added the longer blades. But, you know, I was just looking at the maps. They were turbine 57 and turbine 11.
I don't have the map in front of me, and I will try to quick find that after once we get to the next section here. I believe turbine 11 got right up to but not beyond the setback limit, but I will pull that up again and make sure. I know turbine 57 was the one that did overlap.
I see.
But, yeah, I will take a look at that again just to make sure I didn't miss something there.
Okay. Thank you.
You said, Ellen, it's 57 that is this non-participant who passed away,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. Just as continuing through the slide, the sound, the noise requirements, we did do noise, a new noise evaluation, and there were a few turbines that we will be outfitting with serrated trailing edge or STEs to make those quieter, so that now all, with that plan, all of those turbines continue to meet the noise limits of, I think it was 45 dBA, but I apologize. I should have had that memorized. It's different in Minnesota. And then cultural and wetland avoidance also. We've avoided those previously reviewed disturbed areas from the past, where the plan is to just utilize existing access roads and previously cleared and disturbed areas. And in that cultural question too, some of the stuff that came up in that earlier SHPO on the docket that request was based on some additional cleared areas for the original project, and those areas had been reviewed by Westwood back when RES was developing the project, but they had completed a review, but they hadn't gotten, I think RES had not submitted that report to the SHPO for the final review, but those areas are not being impacted by this repower. So we did, and as is noted on the docket, we've got that cleared up, but I just wanted to note that. And so, yep, it complies with all the prior commission orders for this particular project. The amendment request asks for removal of that megawatt limitation. And as noted, that's consistent with the approach for other repower projects. Docket, it's asking for removing that upper limit, but we would still, as we said, only it would be operating at 150 megawatts where it connects to the grid.
And Ellen, this is Molly. I just wanted to jump in for 1 second. On the setback, the intent would be to request approval of the variance conditioned on receipt of the waiver. And as Ellen said, if no waiver is obtained, that will not be repowered, and that would be the condition that we'd be seeking.
Thanks, Molly. Sorry. Yep, I mixed those terms up.
No, that's fine.
I have another question. Unless it should be for save for somebody else, Ellen. But on the noise issues, I noted in the application that the original study was done on the noise with the new turbines, and there was, I think, 7 receptors who were higher than the 45 dBA, and then you put some sort of something on the blades to reduce the noise. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yep. So that was they're called serrated trailing edges, or STEs. It's and it's possible somebody else knows more detail about them. But basically, they get attached to the edges of the blades, and it breaks up the wind as it goes over those blades, which just it kind of breaks it up so that it doesn't create as much noise. So we added STEs to all of the turbines that were impacting those receptors. And once those were added, they remodeled that, and then that was reduced below the required amount. And if anybody else, I don't know if Dean or Tom are more expert on STEs than that. Otherwise, we can definitely get you some more detail on how those work.
That was the first I've heard of those, and I'm curious to know, do they reduce the efficiency of the turbines in any way, or are they cost prohibitive, or if not, why aren't they used more routinely to reduce the noise, which is one of the biggest complaints of the wind facilities just in general?
I know that there is a cost. There's a cost associated with them. It's not exorbitant, but there are additional maintenance needs when there are STEs on, so that is one reason why we don't just automatically always install them. But as far as the efficiency question, I'm not sure if there is an impact from that, and unless somebody else on this call wants to jump in and note that, I think we will look into that and get back to you.
That would be great, Ellen. Thank you.
Okay.
Commissioner Fedorchuk, I can say that there are other projects that have used LNTE blades to ensure compliance with the sound requirement in North Dakota. So I can throw that out there and could share that information if you'd like.
It's really the first time I've heard about it. I don't know if, Randy, if it rings a bell with you or if that was new to you as well, but maybe I missed that in previous hearings.
It does ring a bell with me. I've heard of that along the way, but I don't remember in what case. I didn't recall the name of them, and I don't know the answers to your other questions about reducing efficiency or just how much they cost. But I do have a question on the same line, if anyone happens to know. Is that something that just kind of can be put on any blade? Or, like, if someone is experiencing a lot of problems, and maybe it's older technology blades that aren't made anymore, can they be put on those too? Or is it just some of the newer facilities that even have that available? It's a curiosity of mine. It does not really have to do with this case, though. But
Ellen, if I may.
Please.
That would have to be something that would have to be discussed with the manufacturer of the blades and the turbines themselves, because each one of those have a specific engineering component to it. And the application or removal of any components of those would have to be discussed with the manufacturer to find out the efficiencies or the impact it would have on that machine.
Okay. Thanks for sharing that. That's just something for us to keep in mind, you know, when sometimes problems develop way after the siting case, once something is operational, a possibility to explore. Thank you.
Certainly.
I think we have nothing outstanding, so whoever's next can continue.
Ellen, I believe that was the end of your presentation, so we're open for questions from the commission.
Okay, I'm going to kick it off because I've been wondering this the entire time, and I don't know if I missed it in the application, but the application does seek to remove that 150 megawatt max that used to be common in siting orders. But the interconnection is going to still be 150. So what's the point in going from 2 megawatt turbines to 2.2? When your interconnection is limited, is it just that this is a turbine and blade type that's available on the market and it's cheaper than trying to find or make some that are 2 megawatts? Or is there some other reason why you would go to a 2.2?
I had that same question, and I know there are people that can give a more technical answer than I, but the key is that typically it's not producing the full 150 megawatts at the site. So by increasing those to 2.2 megawatt turbines, each individual turbine is able to produce a little bit more power below that cap. So typically we're not maxing out the total amount that can connect to the grid. So, you know, you're getting a certain amount of efficiency out of each one of those turbines, and you're, by doing this, we're able to increase the amount that we can get out of each of those, which is entirely possibly still below that 150 megawatts on any given day or at any given time.
And that makes perfect sense. I'm kind of regretting that I didn't think of that myself.
There's also line
losses. Well, I asked the question too.
So if...
Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt there, but line losses I know is one that we've seen this used for some other wind farms as well, where their total installed capacity on a tower-by-tower basis adds up to more than their interconnection, with the idea that they're going to have some line losses between all of those turbines getting to through the collectors and through the substation and then finally to their interconnection point. So they kind of size them. So after all those line losses, they're still not able to put out even at max anything more than that interconnection amount.
Good point.
Randy, I have a few other questions.
Okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead if you had more.
I was just turning to Commissioner Haugenhoffert, but she said to have you go.
Okay. A couple things. How did you communicate with the community? How have you notified the landowners, neighboring landowners, the area in general about this pending potential activity and change?
I might call on Chad to add a little bit of context to this, but we've had multiple mailings that have gone out regarding this starting sometime last year. And I know that agents have met with a couple of the larger landowners that are involved in this project. Also, Jamie Orrick knows a number of the landowners up there. So I think there have been several different landowner mailings that have gone out to all the participating and adjacent landowners, as well as some direct communications through some of the staff. And hopefully Chad maybe can jump in and add a little color to that.
No, I think that was spot on, Ellen. I don't really have much to add there.
How about non-participating landowners? Those are the ones I'm probably the most concerned about. Folks that wouldn't have heard from your normal channels.
The non-participants would have been included in a few of those mailings that Ellen had referenced over the last year and a half or so.
Okay. So you're pretty confident you've covered the territory pretty thoroughly?
Yes, I would say so.
Okay. What are you doing with the old parts and blades?
Tom, do you have any specifics you want to? I know that we are planning that they will either be reused or recycled at this time. I think we have a couple of different possibilities, and we know that they'll be either reused or recycled in some manner, but the specifics of those we're continuing to work on with the different companies that we work on. So I don't think we know the specific outcome yet, but we have a couple of options that we're working on.
Okay. Could we ask for you to file a plan with us on your disposal for all of the previous parts, where you planned to, how you plan to dispose of them?
Sorry, I nodded at the screen, but you probably didn't see that. Yes, we can absolutely do that.
And can
that
you,
would be great.
I just want to jump in on that. So I understand recycling of those kinds of components, but you said reused or recycled. So other than recycling, like how do you use an old blade that you have gone through the trouble of taking down?
Tom,
Yeah, I can jump on here. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
So there's some folks out there that take these blades, they cut them up, they send them to a processor, and sometimes they're used in reprocessing like cement kilns or for other reuse, sometimes certain types of aggregate or concrete. So there's some options out there.
I guess I would have considered that recycling as opposed to reusing. But I'm glad it's not all going in a landfill. Julie, did you have any more questions?
I do.
Go ahead.
Let's see here. The other question I had was in regards to the mention in the application, I think, Ellen, you mentioned it too, that there might be some reinforcement needed for on the structures to accommodate these bigger plates. Could you provide a little bit more color on that? How do you provide, what would that reinforcement look like? And how would you do that on the existing structures?
Ellen, if you're talking, we can't hear you. So I'm just wondering who would be the one to take that particular question.
I'll jump in right here. So there's some reinforcement analysis done by a structural company, a structural engineering firm that we work with, and we determined that, or they determined that reinforcement isn't needed of the towers.
That's easy.
So there was some thought that it was needed at one point, but the analysis was done and it's not required.
Okay. I think that kind of concludes my list of questions, Randy.
Commissioner Fedorchuk, can I ask a follow-up question on the plan that you requested?
Sure.
Are you asking for that as a kind of an addition to the application or as a kind of condition of the approval? And I just am thinking about it from a timing perspective to make sure we...
I need to probably talk to our staff a little bit about that. It's something that is still kind of a question mark out there. I was under the assumption that all of those permits were being handled by the health department and managed. And then I got pictures of wind blades being disposed of in North Dakota fields, like out in what eastern North Dakota, which is not, on my understanding, allowable. So this is the first time it came up since that happened, and I just want to make sure that we're appropriately talking about this stuff ahead of time. So whatever you can provide in advance of our decision, just I'm sure you've got a plan for it. I know Xcel Energy is, going to take good care of these. But just I want to make sure that we're asking the questions and we have a record to show that, this is being done appropriately.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Haugenhofer, did you have questions?
Well, I'm just, this is my first repowering and I can't read my mind. This is my first repowering, so when looking at taking down old blades and putting on new blades, and when I look at the layout, hopefully there's no incidents that happen, but let's say taking down an adjacent farmer says, there was damage. How do you handle that? Or that would be a call that potentially we could get.
And so is the question, if when you're talking about damage, are you talking about damage with like to a field or something?
Land damage, field damage, they're claiming damage, loss of.
Sure. And I'll turn this over to Ellen to answer the specifics. I know that would also be addressed in the agreement with the landowner, that there would be obligations to reclaim. But Ellen, if you have more to add.
How about a non-participating? you know, like if it was incident out here.
Ellen, do you want to, do you have someone that'll address that? Yeah, we're still not hearing you, Ellen. So does someone have, could Chad or somebody jump in on that?
I believe Ellen would be taking care of that.
Until we can hear Ellen, I know the answer.
I'm able
to, go ahead.
I was just going to say, this is Dave Cedarquist. I'm able to hear Ellen, so can the commission not hear?
No.
I can't hear Ellen either.
And I understand with the agreement between the landowner and you guys. That's in the agreement. We don't get into that. I'm just more interested in those that are non-participating.
So I can say from a practical perspective that they're not allowed to be on non-participating property, so you have to have some sort of an agreement to be authorized to be on that property. So there shouldn't be an incident that's involving a non-participant. And these, as we've talked about with the setbacks, the turbines are set back from the property line, so they're not right next to a non-participating property owner. And so that would also be a protection against there being something that happens on non-participating property. In the instance that someone inadvertently, you know, went onto the wrong property, I am confident that Excel would take the steps to ensure that that issue is addressed with the landowner.
Anything else until we
no.
get the answer to the first part? So are there old, is there an old road use agreement from the original siting that is still in effect with Rowlett County? And if any of these use town or county roads, I guess I don't know, but or is a new road use agreement needed, or what about that? Or is that also an Ellen question?
So I know per what we've filed that that has been discussed with the county, and the comments from the county was the timing of the road use agreement. So the specifics were still a ways out from construction. They wanted to wait until they get closer and have more specifics on what would need to be upgraded specifically before they complete the road use agreement. But my understanding, unless, and please tell me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is they intend to have a road use agreement in place for the repower project.
But do not, as of now.
I think at this point they just have talked about it. They do not have this in place.
Did I hear you correctly? The intent to have a new road use agreement?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
I think while we're waiting, I can address, so Commissioner Feroshek was asking about an additional turbine location that looked like it may be too close. And I think there might be some confusion about the different colored circles on the map. So I'm assuming she's looking at, this is, what do I have here? Figure 3 exclusion area maps. And it is page 7 of 13. And tower number 11 that she was referencing. There's two circles around that. One of them is red, which is the turbine height setback from a non-participating landowner, which is in our rules, versus the local road setback, which is, I forget what the calculation there is, but it's more. And there's, on that particular line, there's no road to setback from. There's only the property line. So the red circle does not extend past the non-participating landowner boundary, but the yellow circle does. However, the yellow circle doesn't apply to that tower.
You are correct.
Okay, thank you. And then...
Thanks, Victor. You're right. That's what I was looking at.
Okay. And then tower 57 is a slightly different situation. So that one, we have the same kind of yellow and red circle. So that is on page 9 of 13 in that same exhibit. The red line in that scenario extends to the non-participating landowner, and that's why the waiver would be required.
That is also correct.
Okay.
And Ellen, are you able to talk? I'm guessing no. No.
About now.
Yes. Yay. So please, hopefully you heard what I had shared, and you can let them know if I've said anything that's...
Yes. Thank you very much for stepping in. Yes, we've talked to the county, and we are in agreement that a new road use agreement will be needed, and it's just, it was too early at that time, but we gave them a presentation about the proposed repower and kind of what that would entail, answered a couple questions a number of months ago. And they did say, yep, it looks like a new road use agreement would be required later on once we get closer to construction. So we will be doing that. And thank you also, yes, that setback question that was confusing on the maps, that there are different setback distances for different scenarios. So in that case, it does look like there's an additional setback that's not met, but that was the road question. So thanks for clarifying that.
So what is your current timeline for beginning construction?
We're expecting end of 2024, probably starting some of the civil work in preparation for most of the turbine work, which would be following in 2025. The reason we're this far in advance is because we, working with Vestas, we need to make sure that we're confident that we can get the approval so that we can make this purchase, because it's a fairly big investment. So just want to make sure that we're making a wise investment in purchasing those new materials.
So, am I clear? What you're seeking the approval, but with the contingency that the new road use agreement with Rowlett County, and what, I don't know about town or county, if that's needed or not, since it's so close, would be filed with us before the construction starts. Is that correct, Molly?
So we have typically not filed road use agreements. So we always file copy of permits, but we do not typically file road use agreements because it's not a permit or license. And it's up to the county. Most of the time we have road use agreements in place. So, but they're not, and I know in part because I'm asked sometimes, can I share road use agreements? And they're not typically provided. So just so you have background.
Looking to staff, so usually we just have testimony that they have that. Is that correct?
I think that's generally how those have been handled. I agree. They're generally not a permit or anything along those lines. But
so we would just have in the order that they need a road use agreement if the county requires it or something like that.
I think we could put something like that in if the company wouldn't.
But is that what we usually have? Or
we don't always address
road use agreements for years, but.
We don't always address the road use things. I mean, other county, you know, like the conditional use permits and things of that nature, we will sometimes specifically reference those. I can't recall referencing a road use agreement, but I won't say we've never done it either because I'm just not certain. But I guess if we could call it out specifically.
I'm not seeking it like for some specific reason in this case. I just thought we always seem to be addressing it in hearings, and usually people have it by then. And mm-hmm. I'm not recalling exactly how we addressed it in the order.
I think in part it's addressed by the certification provision that says there's an obligation to obtain all permits and approvals from the local authority plus to restore roads. So my understanding is that's usually what's been relied upon in the past, and maybe – I'm not sure if it's just a matter of knowing, as you said, Victor, that it's the counties take care of that. Either they require it for their CUP, or it's required to have the authority to even upgrade the roads, because you can't do it without the authority. So I think it's typically been left to the local authorities, but it is noted in the materials that they did discuss specifically with the county the road use agreement, if that's helpful.
And my, I think, only other question is, what has been done to identify occupied residences from non-occupied? What was the process of making that determination?
Ellen, you can jump in, but I will say these sites were sited a long time ago, so not in that determination would have been done at the time that the original project was permitted. But I don't know what, Ellen, do you have any more information about the data set that was used for the occupied residences?
It looks like Dean's also ready to weigh in. Westwood did do an evaluation of that and identified all those residences during the original process, and we did consider all of those still to be occupied for this process, and we did not see any new residences within that area, but Dean, go ahead and add context to that.
It's safe to say we did a very conservative approach to this. When we did the original permitting, we actually took the aerial photographs because, you know, we're looking at a number of different features on these sites, and so we actually did an inventory of all structures that we could find on the aerials, and then we actually ground truth that when we had people in the field. So we were looking at both occupied and unoccupied and subsequently destroyed structures for the original permitting. And then with that data set that we had originated from, you know, about 2010 to 2014, we took that data and then compared it to the more recent aerials that we had to see if there were any discrepancies. And there were not. We did not find that there were any additional structures, but again, taking a relatively conservative approach that if it was suspected to be an occupied structure, we assumed it was occupied in terms of doing our shadow flicker and noise studies.
Okay. Again, this is another one of those that isn't really so much relevant maybe to this case, because I find that answer satisfactory. But for staff, I think as I imagine we're going to start having a lot more repowering cases. So through the siting process, we hopefully do a good job of identifying occupied structures and making sure that nothing without a waiver is built that violates noise or shadow flicker guidances. And then if somebody decides to build a residence or move into one that was unoccupied, I guess that's kind of their problem. But is it still their problem then if we then, through a repowering, allow something that causes a lot more shadow flicker noise than what they anticipated when they moved into that structure? This is only going from 2 to 2.2. Maybe the differences wouldn't be that much, but what if it was going from a 1 to a 3.5 and, you know, I guess it's something to think about in future cases.
Well, I think it's a fair question. I think if, you know, I haven't looked at the original sound and shadow flicker analysis from the original project. I would assume they are different.
Not remarkably different.
Okay.
There is I think the shadow flicker was essentially the same because we're not effectively changing the gross morphology of the machines. We're adding 10 meters to a radius, and that does not necessarily translate into a massive change for shadow flicker, especially with the constraints of where the sun is on the, you know, in the sky and the seasonality of that issue. But the noise was probably the more significant, and I not significant, but it did show that there was a difference, and that's why we took into account with that 45 decibel limit that we have, we did have those 7 residences that did exceed that. And then for all the contributing turbines for those 7 residences, we'll have those serrated trail edge applications.
going to go around the horn again, see if there's any more questions. Looks like Commissioner Hagenhoff.
Yeah, when going through this, I don't see the cost associated with this project.
Ellen, do you have the cost estimate? I know that we had it because we talked about it to do to do the amount of the fee.
Right. I know I had it somewhere. I just couldn't.
I believe it's $169 million. I had to find it in an email recently, too. I think that's...
$159,
but let me just
It sounds familiar. I had the number $160 million in my head, but I just wasn't sure where it was pulling that. So.
From an email.
Yep, from an email.
Commissioner Fedorchak, have you thought of any additional questions?
I don't have any additional questions. Thank you.
Okay, I don't either. I kind of forgot about you guys.
I usually just talk anyway, but I have a little bit about the SHPO. So we've had a couple of letters from SHPO on this. We had one in back in the beginning of June. They actually asked us at that time to put this on hold. The company has sent them some information, and they said, okay, we're reviewing that so you can proceed, but I don't think we've got a final something from them until...
So I'm handing you the letter that was filed, just so that... I think it was a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, this letter I have, and this essentially said we received an updated report from the company. We're reviewing it, but we don't have their final concurrence on this yet. This is just saying, okay, we have what we asked for. We're reviewing the documents, but they haven't concurred with the no significant sites affected yet.
So that particular is my understanding, and Dean and Ellen can jump in, but my understanding is what they were commenting on is a report that was not applicable to the repower, but it got submitted at the same time. So that's why we wouldn't be submitting the concurrence letter on that, because it is not for this project. It was kind of like they pulled that in. Dean, do I have that correct?
That's essentially what we're looking at. It was areas of expanded access roads and cable routes and one turbine shift that occurred in 2014. And so we went out in 2014, produced and did those surveys. All negative, nothing found, and then they did not get put through on a due diligence process. And when we initiated this process here, we noticed, SHPO noticed the discrepancy in terms of the area that we were identifying as previously certified and cleared. And then we identified where that discrepancy came from and then produced an addendum report. And that is what has been submitted to SHPO that is currently being reviewed. It is a negative report. There was nothing found. And so we're hoping, and we fully expect to have a no impact determination from that as well.
Okay. And yeah, so I think I was just getting a repeater there. Anyway, so what you just said is what I found. So I discussed this with SHPO as well, and that was my understanding, that what they were asking for is actually a portion of the project back from 2014 that was not given to them. So they hadn't had an opportunity to weigh in on that. And just to kind of make sure we get it nice and clean, I wasn't aware of there being anything problematic in there. But I guess I would like to see that final SHPO report saying we concur with that, just to kind of clear the whole thing out.
Most definitely, and as soon as that is issued, of course. And to reiterate your point, I believe it was so that SHPO would have that record. And I believe that's the issue that they were looking at, is that they wanted the report that said that it had been done. So they had the record of it being completed.
Sure. Yep, we're good.
Border Winds does have ADLS installed already, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and no issues with this conversion affecting that at all? I would assume that's all separate components that would just remain in place on the towers and continue to be used in the future?
That is a, I think there's probably some work that has to happen with those. I'm not an expert on the up tower components from ADLS, but we are, yeah, we definitely are making sure that those remain in place or are replaced during the repower.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Anything else from staff? Rob?
This is Rob Frank with Public Utilities. I'm a new analyst, so I might have some basic questions here. Just this going from 100 meters to 110 meters, is that simply because it's a new available technology, or is that sort of a limit that's put on there from you don't have to then replace the foundational structure at all? That won't affect that? Is that where the limitation's coming from, or is it just sized to kind of a cost-benefit analysis that you're able to increase capacity to 165 and it helps with the line loss and efficiencies? Just a little information on that would be great.
I'm going to ask that either Tom or Sun respond to that, because I think they will have a much more useful answer than me.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of what's out there in the market and then also efficiency, right? So you're going to get better efficiency at lower wind speeds. So that was the background.
Does that do anything like extend the life of the facility? Or what's, making up for the $169 million investment? I mean, obviously you ran the numbers, but that's enough of an increase to make up for that?
Correct.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
I'm going to go around the horn again. Julie or Sherry, did you have any more questions?
I don't.
I do have. How does this impact PTCs? Are you getting another series of those? And if so, how long and what's the, I suppose you can't say, but if you can say what the value is, that'd be great.
The short answer is it does reset the clock, but I don't know the value offhand.
Do you know for how long it resets the clock? Is it another 10 years?
10 years, yes.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay, I'm not seeing any other questions. Molly, did you have anything else that you wanted to add without a question?
No, I don't think so. I think the only thing that we had identified was a little bit of information on LNTE and the plan for disposal of the parts that will be removed for the repower. Was there anything else that you guys had identified? Okay.
I'm not recalling anything else.
Okay.
Okay. Is there any objection to the evidence produced becoming part of the official record? And I'm talking about, I think everything that was on the screen was in the handout, but the oral as well as any written or on screen evidence?
No, there's no objection, and we filed a copy of the PowerPoint this morning, so it is filed in the docket as well.
Okay, so all the evidence presented today will be a part of the record upon which a final decision is made. Are there any other matters for the record?
I don't have any, no.
Oh.
I don't object either.
You don't object either. Yeah. Sorry, Brian. Okay. And with that, we will close this informal hearing.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks.